Linoleum knife. We're back.
We are back in the USA.
From.
Whoa. Stop manhandling your microphone.
I'm done. I'm finished touching it.
Okay. We are back in the United States after our sojourn to the Canary Islands and Spain.
Where we were for 10 days.
Yes. And it was great.
This is Linoleum Knife.
It is.
We'll tell you more about Spain in a minute or not, because we have more important things to discuss. We have a special guest.
This is a podcast of the cinema?
A podcast of the cinema. I am Dave White. I'm the film critic for Movies.com. And you are?
Alonzo Duraldi, film reviews editor for The Wrap and film critic for What the Flick.
We have two guests.
We do.
One of them is whatever.
Yeah. He's been here before. Nothing special. Robert Abele of the LA Times is back with us again today.
Yeah. A smattering of applause.
And then the person, the unknown secret person that we teased you with
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago before we left, is now here at our table, our special Hollywood movie star guest. She has appeared in such, hang on. Pause for a minute.
Okay, now Dave has actually bothered to pull up the IMDb page of our special guest.
She's been in a lot of things.
Yes.
The Cosby Show.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Not to date me or anything.
CB4. Beverly Hills 90210. OG Beverly Hills 90210.
I was the black girl.
The Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Family Matters, Dream On.
I had a recurring on that. It was my first job in Los Angeles, and you still don't know who I am, audience.
Half Baked, The Craft.
Hell yeah, The Craft.
Drew Carey Show.
Fifth caller with the correct name gets a prize.
Groove, which I will discuss here in a moment because I really like that movie.
Yeah, it's fun.
So many other things.
I've done things in this decade, by the way.
Most recently seen in the smash cult hit
Sharknado 2, the second one.
I've done things besides that in this decade.
And okay, what else in this decade? Oh wait,
no.
The star of the UPN sitcom Half and Half.
Oh yeah,
the star.
Oh okay,
not just like part of the show.
Half.
So you were one of the halves.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's why she did Alec Mappa's podcast before ours. It all makes sense
that's
now.
That's true.
She's light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Depending on the day.
She is Rachel True.
Yay.
Yay for me.
Now, when you were up for CB4, was everybody like getting, was it like the big room where you were either going to do Star Wars or Carrie, where it was CB4 or Fear of a Black Hat?
I know, there were two of the exact same movies being cast at the exact same time. No, what was interesting about that is I was actually coaching little kids on a pilot, on a Raven Simone pilot in New York City, and we were shooting on the Saturday Night Live soundstage.
Nice.
And Mr. Chris Rock happened to come by on his day off, and that's how I met him. Just randomly. So that's how I met Chris Rock, just on his soundstage. And then I ended up in his movie. I had to audition many, many times. But I did have, by the fourth script and fourth audition, the character's name had become Delilah True, which is my last name. So I thought I might have a good shot at this. And that is what brought me and moved me from New York City out to Los Angeles.
Well, all right.
So Sharknado 2.
It's what's important.
That's what we call cutting to the chase.
Sharknado 2 happened.
Yes, it did.
And
Brady Sinelis, by the way, a big fan. He told me when I was on his podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And it's funny because either I was only half listening to you when you told me the story that you were not obligated to repeat. Because you said, I just worked with Robert Hayes and blah blah blah. Yeah. And then, you know, the story. And I don't remember if you said Sharknado 2 or not. Like, maybe I was too...
I probably didn't.
I was probably really into my falafel because I remember I remember what I was eating. I just don't remember what you were talking
That's
about.
That's the effect I have on men.
Yeah. No, well, it's, when Dave's eating, it's pretty much everything else.
My falafel,
by the way.
And it's a Moishe's falafel.
It was a Moishe's falafel, which is very important falafel to me. And so
keep your hands and feet away from it.
So, like, I filed the funny story that you told, and then I just was, I mean, of course I was watching Sharknado 2. And then boom, there you are. I was like, hey, Rachel. And I yelled to him in the other room. I go, Rachel's in Sharknado 2.
By the way, thank you for knowing it's me, because Entertainment Tonight put in that it was Tracy Toms. She's way younger than me. She's a singer, actor, dancer, triple threat, talented chick. So then I had to send her a message and be like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to drag you into my world.
Oh, God. Zina, that's like the horrible stereotype of, like, but is that a thing that happens a lot?
That they think all black actors are the same?
Yes.
Sometimes more than you'd think.
Is it
it's
like the famous Lawrence Fishburne, Sam Jackson thing?
It is exactly it's exactly like that, because if you look at Tracy Toms, we actually do look like we could be, you know, cousins maybe.
Sure.
We're brown girls with curly hair. I mean,
you're both cute in the face.
Oh, aren't you adorable?
Aren't
you adorable, sir?
No.
but no, that does happen. I get mistaken for like Cree Summer or, you know, I don't know, other people too, like Radon Chong, who's actually older than me.
Radon Chong is like,
I know.
How old is Radon Chong?
No, lovely and looks great. Yeah, I'm just saying, it's interesting, the
Ruby
spectrum.
D.
Cicely Tyson. Which, clearly, I could see how after my performance in Sharknado 2.
Yeah, well, sure. Elmo Lincoln, that's the weird one.
So I yell at him, hey, Rachel's in Sharknado 2. And then by the time he got out to the living room, you had already been eaten.
Well, you know, you got to hit it and quit
it. Exactly.
So what happened for me is, like, totally one of my biggest fears in real life is to survive a plane crash but get eaten off my flotation cushion by a shark. Like, that's actually a real fear. Like, I make it through the crash. And
you
then
just made it one of mine.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
So, like, two fears in one. So then I get a call from the asylum people, like, hey, do you want to do this little bit in Sharknado with Robert Hayes, the original guy from Airplane, where you get basically eaten off your flotation cushion while in midair from a shark? And I said, yeah, sure, why not?
Was it therapeutic?
It was a little bit. Just a little bit. A wee bit. Also, Robert Hayes, very charming, still has a fabulous head of hair. Very dashing man.
What happened to Robert Hayes? Like, since Take This Job and Shove It in Airplane 2, I can't think of what he's been doing.
I don't know. TV stuff, probably, maybe.
I guess.
I think it's like...
I could look him up on IMDb, but I already did that. I already did that once today.
Right,
and
we know how long that takes.
It takes me a lot of time.
Because, you know, Julie Hager, she works.
That was also why one of my friends was like, you have to do it. It's the Julie Haggerty role to sit next to him. So I said, you're right. I do have to do it to sit next to him. And I also I was like, oh, great. I'm going to be in Sharknado 2 and I'll be the first person eaten and I'll be black and the first person eaten. But I wasn't the first person to die.
You
weren't.
No, you weren't.
No, I wasn't. Yeah. I wasn't at all.
You were like the third or something.
That's called progress.
You followed Kelly Osbourne got eaten before you.
That's
called
progress. And also, I really liked that I was, you know, just in the teaser, in the very beginning, just a little taste of true.
And I just really like a good death film, and even if it's by a digital shark that is in no way realistic looking, I still think it's great.
Deep Blue Sea,
yeah,
has a great digital shark death.
Yeah, I'm into it. So I really
Sharknado, to you.
Sharknado 2.
Huzzah!
Now we know you because of Robert, because y'all go to the movies together.
Yeah,
he takes you to all the movies all the time.
Robert loves to take me to pretty much like the worst,
the garbage
movies ever.
You're a lucky
person. He's reviewing
them,
and I'm like going along for the free movie ticket.
Right.
But it's always literally the lowest common denominator of film.
Because
Thank you.
Be honest, my wife won't go to these movies with me because she's a very, very shrewd woman, and she knows that life is short. And so Rachel is a lovely companion.
Rachel is
for
not
these
a shrewd woman.
Rachel needs to keep up with the industry and what's happening.
That's
exactly.
True.
But
so,
it is like one of those things where occasionally I've taken Rachel to movies where at certain points, and I'm there to review them, but I'll look over. I remember at Halloween 2, I looked over. You had sunk so far into your seat, and you had just kind of were closing your eyes. And I just thought, oh, this is too much.
I may or may not have fallen asleep. And the thing is, I actually really liked the first remake. I did. That's oddly enough. So I was looking forward to seeing that.
Looking forward to a Rob Zombie sequel.
The bar's not high here. Okay, it's right. Not high in my world. Right. Yeah. So, yes, that movie was a little disappointing, and at a certain point, I just had to... It's like I disassociated.
I remember in the Rob Zombie Halloween 2 thinking, wow, I never thought I would miss the original Halloween 2.
Exactly!
I like the original Halloween 2.
Now, I think that's the only one I've fallen asleep during, though. Like, I'm a trooper. I'll stay awake.
I'm not a trooper.
You're not?
No. I will fall asleep in a thing, and I have to still write the review. Yeah.
But sometimes, they're like, I mean, I was like really happy like when I was a little worried when I took you to see You're Next. And it ended up being, like, kind of enjoyable.
Oh, yeah, which was another one that I didn't set the bar terribly high for, but
Your Next is great.
Yeah.
Your Next, and that guy's latest film, The Guest, is...
We need to see it. We haven't seen it.
Oh, my God, it's fantastic.
I've been hearing great things.
Perhaps
like,
you knew we were in Spain for 10 days. We've missed a lot of films.
But I'm also a fan of a horror. How do I say that without a new
horror? A
horror? It's like horror, rhymes with Torah. No, it does. Horror.
You can always say, like, Marlon Brando.
I like a horror movie.
There's a teenage girl in Men, Women, and Children, a film that is set in Texas, who has your accent.
What is like New York Black Jew?
No, she's like someone offers her something and she's like, I've already eaten. And I was like, that ain't Texas.
Oh, she didn't even try to do the Texas accent.
She didn't even try. Yeah, she wasn't even trying.
Oh.
And I thought, that's New York, New Jersey, the way you're talking.
There are moments in The Craft where I was wondering if Nev Campbell's Canadian was rubbing off on you. Because you go sorry at one point.
You know,
I was like,
she,
am I watching Degrassi?
You know what? She was my buddy during that film, so it probably did rub off.
You say sorry. She says sorry. Like in real life.
I say sorry like a Canadian. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's because I love and respect my northern brothers and sisters. Yeah,
he had not seen it. I just made him watch it recently. And I said, look, she's coming on the show. You're going to see The Craft.
No, I've been meaning to see it for ages because I love Mr. Fleming.
I think Mr. Fleming is a very talented director.
He is.
I think that Dick, his film Dick, is great.
Dick is great.
Oh,
Dick is great. Threesome, I thought, was
really
groundbreaking
really
at the time.
I think he does.
Hamlet 2 is funny.
And yes, Hamlet 2 is great. He's a really good director, and I loved an interview he did about The Craft and Dick saying that he just loves working with theoretical teenage girls. I'm making air quotes because
you
I
were
was
like a 90210
teenager.
Because
I was like 3,000 when I did that movie. So, but basically, he said he liked working with teenage girls because they're very effusive and they have a lot of emotions and it is all sort of kinetic compared to, like, let's say, teenage boys who are like whatever. So I hope, and I know he's doing a lot of television directing now, and I wish him much success. But but one thing I want to say about The Craft, we had to cut 3 times because when I did go to this one, where there's a scene where my hair falls out, and I go, let's go to the mirror. And they're like, cut, cut. And I was like, what? And they're like, no, say that word. And I was like, the mirror. And I'm like, what? You said, look in the mirror. I still...
be any clearer.
Mirror Sorvino.
I still have no concept how to say that word correctly, by the way.
Now, did you get, like, nutty fan mail out of that movie?
Yes. I mean, I can still go just about anywhere. All these years later... And
everywhere like if I am with you and Robert in any public location...
You get clocked.
Someone comes up to you and wants a picture.
I can get a hemp bracelet anywhere on this planet. It's true. Which actually is sort of cool because... When I first came here and I'd done CB4, that's it. I remember, and Heathers had been sort of very big.
Right.
Been out a couple years before that. So as an actor, I was like, I just really want to be in something that's, you know, like Heathers, and it's culty and everybody loves it. And, da, 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 da. And so anyway, the lesson I learned is aim higher. No, really, because I got that. I got it. Got it. It shows with Heather's every weekend. Yeah. Fair enough. So, you know, it's nice to say I could manifest what I wanted, but also, you know, shoot for the stars, I'd say to anyone.
Well, yeah. Didn't you guys just have, like, a big anniversary screening at CineFamily?
We did last year, and it wasn't even, like, the 20th. It just happened to be a big one, and Robin Tunney, Robin Tunney, and everyone was...
What are you breaking, Gary Connie?
Okay.
Everyone was at that screening except for the fabulously talented Fariza Balk, so it was really nice to see everyone. And I actually am still really good friends with Nev, so I think to me that's one of the best gifts out of that film.
Nice. It's a jacket, you know, it's going to have a takeaway from that sort of thing for a production.
You did not parlay that film experience into opening your own occult shop, though, like Fariza Balk.
Unlike Fariza Balk. No, but here's a little secret about me. Before I did The Craft...
It was on Cahuenga, by the way.
Yeah, it was. Panpipes. I have done tarot cards probably since I was a teenager. So, you know, when that script came up, I did think, if anyone's going to play a little black witch in this town, it's me. So I made that happen. And even after being told by my agents, no, you're too old, we're not even going to submit you. So I was like, really, you won't? So then I found someone, and they said, we'll submit you. And then I had to pay them an extra 10% for that one phone call. But so to me, I liked some of the themes of The Craft, actually. Even all these years later, I'm like, what you put out does come back.
I think it's a cool movie.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hold up maybe CGI and effects wise compared to today.
Neither does Ghostbusters. I just saw it.
True, yeah. Actually, but it's still great. So
sure,
it's fun to be a part of.
So now I'm curious, like, who, you know, when there's the one hot black role, who was always at the auditions with you? I'm imagining it's like you and Stacey Dash and Holly Robinson Pete.
You know what? I was never in the group of like hot black chicks. You know
what
I mean? No, I wasn't. I was like cute, quirky. Black girl. I'm your black best friend. How are you doing? I've literally said that in every movie I've ever been in. Just straight up. Like, I've actually sat at home and practiced, like, how are you doing? How are you doing? How are you doing? How you doing? You know what I mean? Like, how many freaking ways?
I didn't expect the anal probe.
Say the line. It should be on my tombstone, to be honest.
Did you worry about for Joey on Friends?
No, but also what's implied in the how are you doing? It's like, because it's all about you white person in peril. I am just the black sage here to guide you through this journey.
And this is what... And this is why my DVD recommendation of the week, I'm going to get out of the way right now, is Groove. And here's why. You're not in it too much because it's a huge ensemble cast.
Yeah.
But I recently rewatched it, and because I remember seeing it in 2000 and giving it a good review. And
you're like the only one who gave it a good review.
But didn't
it
get nominated for like an Independent Spirit Award for like Best Picture or something for an Independent Spirit Award nomination?
I put it up for Best Score at LAFCA, but it didn't really...
Did have
Catch
a great
fire.
Soundtrack.
And it was the Thank God It's Friday of the year 2000.
Of Rage.
And that is a good thing.
Yes.
That is a very good thing.
That's true.
But here's what's great about, like, your character in this movie is barely written. But,
what are you trying to say?
But.
Welcome to being a black actor. Thank you.
Hello, friend. Who just finished the AIDS walk.
Yay.
Come on in. Do your thing. We're having a podcast.
Woohoo! Podcast.
A tropical podcast.
But what I liked about your moments in this movie is that you're the only person in this whole enterprise of this like cast of 15, 20 people who swears and calls people a-holes.
Just like in real life.
And is not down with the peace, love, unity, respect aspect of anything. But you're dressed like a hippie chick in the movie with the thing. What's the thing on the forehead?
Bindi.
Yeah, with the bindi on your head. But they assign you to help the guy who's got a drug overdose, and you're like, come on.
<That's>, like, I'm a
not,
tough love kind of guy.
Not
girl.
Helpful to anyone at all in this movie. Like, in the wrong place.
Also,
like,
I'm the only one not on ecstasy. Do you know that?
Yes.
Everyone else is on ecstasy. Yeah. My character is not. And now I'm going to bust out, even it's your recommendation, thank you, but I'm going to bust out the director. Like, the director got mad at me, kind of annoyed at me for not wanting to go up and do ecstasy. And I was like, you know what?
Oh,
I'm an actor.
Oh,
first of all, I went to college, so I've probably done it. Okay. And also, let me sense memory that stuff. Like, I just thought it was the weirdest thing to be like, no, you're really going to come up so we can all do drugs together. No, I
like,
really
don't.
Like,
he really wanted people on drugs on camera?
Not on camera. To come up and bond. And I was like, process. You know what? I'm going to act like I'm your friend. How about that? I'll just act like we're buddies.
Well, there are a lot of folks in that movie, though, who weren't actors.
There were a fair amount of people who weren't actors. Yeah.
But here's a crazy coincidence irony thing. Lola Guadini from Gru took over Ferruccia Balk's role as the undercover FBI agent on The Sopranos.
That
your head is full of weird
true,
stuff.
Actually.
Because Ferruccia Balk did like one episode, and then she was like, what? It's recurring? No thanks. And they reshot her one scene with Lola Guadini, who then was on for like 2 years.
I feel like Alonzo just flashed us. Something like you just flashed us or something. We're like, we saw a little bit of Alonzo there that we weren't supposed
you
to see.
You guys store more facts in your brain than I do.
There's a mechanism in his brain that does.
But
this sort
to
of
bring
thing.
It back around, if you want to listen to a pretty good rave soundtrack,
oh, I love that.
And not much storyline, but a bunch of people having a good time at a rave, Groove's your pick.
There was a beautiful cinematic moment at the end of Groove when Digweed is spinning and he plays that famous song that is a famous song of his, and suddenly the person operating the camera sort of cares about what things look like, and everyone's in slow motion and the music is one speed and the people are the other, and it's really beautiful, and the juxtaposition of that, it's this great moment, it's this beautiful moment. And
there's a running gag about the gay couple that can't find
the place.
And they finally just wind up dancing to their car stereo in the middle of a field. Yeah. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's very sweet, and it definitely has that.
And that was actually, what I love is it was actually shot on film, by the way. Like, it's film. It was like one of the last moments of film, really.
Yeah.
Where you could shoot an indie on film.
Yeah. Sure. It had that 90s indie feel to it, you know, like, because we, Party Girl recently reran somewhere on some
Stars,
and of course it's automatically recording in TiVo. Whenever Party Girl's on TiVo, it's like, oh, Party Girl's on again, let's look at that. And it has that same feeling, like, you know, we're all happy in the club and we're dancing.
I do,
you know?
Like that I got to, when I moved to California, that I got to experience working on films, because there isn't quite anything like, you're working on something for a finite period of time. It's not a TV show where it can go on for years. It's literally like a month or 2 month period. And to be able to shoot back in the day when we did shoot on film, it was very important once action happened, because that film is expensive and you couldn't look at it right away, so you had to get it right. And I have appreciation for the craftsmanship that went into shooting movies back in the day.
Totally. I was there's the old John Waters said that on his early sets, when he would try and get people moving, he would run around yelling dollar, dollar, dollar.
But it makes sense.
And then later, when he was doing like his studio films, he would be going thousand, thousand, thousand.
But now, literally, I've noticed when I shoot on video, things that are shot on video, it's sort of a laissez-faire attitude, because we can do it again. It doesn't matter. It doesn't cost that much. It
and they're looking at it in Video Village. They can relight it if they want.
No, I think it's changed the way, like, when you watch TV shows now, and you know that they've been able to set up shots with, like, 10 different cameras.
Right.
And you just, you know that they're just, it's just like a.
And if the lighting's not right, you can do it in post, and you can tweak it.
Right.
They're just cutting because they have that shot. And you're just like, that didn't mean anything, that cut you just made.
So we were gone for 10 days. And we missed Annabelle.
But y'all did not.
But y'all did not miss Annabelle. And I am really, like, I've got this whole to-do list of movies that I have not seen that I should see, A, for this podcast, B, just because...
For life.
For my job in general, you know, I need to see them.
Top of the list?
I am
Left Behind.
But I am leaning... Because yesterday we saw Gone Girl, so we're going to talk about that at the end of the show. And we're going to see Left Behind tomorrow, so I know there are people who have already written us and said...
What did you think about Left
Behind? Please talk about Left Behind.
We're dying to see it.
That's why I'm here.
We're going to see it.
Wait, Robert.
I wanted to be live for that.
I have a feeling a lot of people are left behind.
Yes.
That's my review. That's why I'm not a reviewer.
The one movie on my to-do list that I may just bag on and not go to is Annabelle. Because I don't have to.
No, you don't have to.
And every single human being I know has said, it's not even fun bad.
Well, no, okay. I'm not going to call it a bad movie, because I don't think it's a bad movie. I think actually I see so many, and you see so many horror films.
Yeah.
You and I, there are so many bad ones out there.
Yeah.
When I see one that has a modicum of
competence.
That I'm fine with it. And then actually, Annabelle is
Rachel's not even giving a modicum of competence.
Rachel was like, no. But there is one genuinely scary sequence at the beginning.
All right.
It's genuinely well made. The rest
stop it, Robert.
The rest of it is by the numbers. But you know, I'm telling you, the director, he was the cinematographer on the first one. And I think The Conjuring is a really good horror film.
Yeah,
and
no,
I think he picked up things that were useful, like how to frame a space so that you're actually dreading what's going to happen in it. Even if what ultimately happens isn't that scary. And look, nothing scares me anymore in these movies. But like, right. but
you're giving him points for just shooting it like a movie.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you,
it's a movie.
I see so many movies that think they're scaring you and think they're creeping you out, and they're doing neither in any way whatsoever. That this movie, the only problem it has is that none of the characters are interesting, and that's a big problem. That's a big problem. I'm willing to admit that it's a big problem. But, you know, it was 90 minutes that flew by and I didn't
That
care.
You'll never get back.
And there's one weird thing, actually. I'm sitting here watching it with Rachel, who is one of my, you know, true, to use the letter word, movie companions, watching a movie that actually has a friend of mine in it. Who's also somebody I often take to screenings, and she's an actress. In the first part, she plays the neighbors next door whose hippie daughter joins a cult, a Manson-like cult, and ultimately comes back and kills everybody. But
that all happens, by the way, in like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah,
so that's the most interesting.
Exactly,
part of the
and that
movie.
Is the most interesting
for the
part.
Record.
Yeah.
Which
so,
is
yeah.
interesting, which was well done.
It was well done. It was
now,
so.
How's Alfre Woodard? That's my only question.
Lord, why does Alfre Woodard have to take jobs in movies like this? And I know why, but it's actually upsetting as an actress to be honest, as a black actress of a certain age, to see that Alfre Woodard is taking this part she is one of our premier black actresses.
And it's weird because
she's just doing it like Michael Caine, just like
yes,
I've got 3 weeks.
They met my quote.
Absolutely.
But remember,
yeah.
like when you
absolutely.
Saw The Conjuring, you thought the Vera Farmiga character was really interesting. I mean, it was
sure,
there.
Yeah.
And so
and
you
the
thought
Lily Taylor
okay,
character.
And if, exactly. Now, if Alfre Woodard is in this playing something like the Vera Farmiga character, then you're like. Okay,
but she's not. She's playing a completely underwritten.
Exactly, underwritten, not interesting, and then does something totally.
And
great
then does something, yeah, ridiculous. That is your white man's burden.
Exactly.
That's all I'm going to say
brother.
About that.
Yeah.
But I would like to not that anyone's asked me, and I'm not a critic. But I would also like to throw in that I feel like Annabelle. On one hand, it's sort of like, oh, white people, why are you so fascinated with crazy dolls? I mean, seriously, that's my first review because.
Oh, it's a doll that no one in the right mind would have been interested in.
Then one of the only laughs that's to be gotten in the movie is the visual of the doll because it's so creepy that no one would ever actually bring it into their house. And then I would also like
it's to like
add,
if Chucky always looked like Chucky.
Absolutely.
And,
no, this
Andy
doll looks worse than Chucky.
But also where I feel like for me, Annabelle failed a little bit is it's trying to tap into a little bit of that Rosemary's Baby time period, 1960s. And so much of that was about the feminine women becoming stronger and feminist, and so that was very specific to a time. So here you have people imitating that time period, and you're right, with not terribly much depth. I mean, I feel like the lead actress was really good, but also is coming from a January Jones school of 1960s Mad Men acting. The guy, lovely looking guy, didn't really put in terribly many layers, but they weren't written in there.
And there's a priest character that it's just like every priest in one of these movies. It's just not, there's something new to that added to that.
Right. So it's 90 minutes. I spent 80 of it going, throw out the doll! Jeez!
And it is thrown out at one point, and then all of a sudden it's just back.
Which nobody's like, hey, what it come back?
The doll looks like a mental patient drag queen. And you're thinking like, and yet the first time it's presented as a gift, and you're just like, why isn't this like immediately tossed as a gift?
It's also life size. It's like a practically like the size of a 10-year-old child. So that's creepy.
What's that mystery
science
theater line from Santa Claus? That's not a doll. That's a sister.
Yeah, that's not a doll. That's like a pet. Like a weird...
But ultimately, if you're going to be a scary movie, you've got to give me some scares. That's what I think with Annabelle.
I
didn't have any
so
scares, and I
yes.
didn't have any laughs.
I'm,
at least entertain me with
I'm
some laugh. You know.
Too jaded to expect scares anymore, so I look for other things. You know, I'm. You know, it's. You know.
Real quick before we get into more movies, I did want to give a mention that this week we lost Jan Hooks.
I know.
Who was, you know, obviously best known for her work on SNL, but of course, you know, was the Alamo tour guide in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yes. Did stuff with Martin Short. I remember watching her on Tush in Atlanta back in the early 80s on the old Turner Broadcasting, like when they were just starting to go national. This guy, Bill Tush, who had been on, like, back when it was Channel 17, WTCG, he would, like, be the middle-of-the-night news guy, and sometimes they would, like, dress a German Shepherd in a shirt and tie and put peanut butter in its mouth and read the news from off-screen. Like, nobody cared. Nobody was watching. And he got to do this sketch comedy show called Tush, and it was all these Atlanta theater people, and Jan Hooks and Bonnie and Terry Turner, who would go on to SNL, started on Tush. And there's a bunch of clips on YouTube that I've been watching, but she's was just a genius, I thought, and so funny, but like, you watch some of her really memorable sketches. Like, last night they reran the Alec Baldwin's first episode where, like, she's the waitress who's flirting with the guy at the diner. Like, she's acting and she's, being funny and not just sort of shticking it up, you know?
She's the last of the Jane Curtin type where you've got a hint of humanity from anybody she played before. Yeah. And mind you, I've always said that, you know, the real true great roles, you know, great times for Saturday Night Live for women came more recently, but that's because women finally got to be allowed to be, like, truly silly and crazy and really do everything else.
Yeah.
But you know, I do sometimes miss the, you know, the Saturday Night Live that was able to give someone like Jan Hooks, like
Nora Dunn, like
those, yeah, you know, great characters that they gave you three dimensional, you know, hints. She was great.
So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there because she was awesome.
So Dracula Untold.
Going back to crappy horror.
It's not even horror.
Is there a reason it's untold?
It's not even horror. Oh, somebody on Facebook said, are they going to change the name of the movie after it's released? Here's what you did not
Dracula
know.
Dracula got served.
Dracula was misunderstood, and he is not the ghoul of all of your sex nightmares. He is... Dark Knight.
Is it I, Frankenstein? Is it like that really horrible movie? That
it's
came
an
out
origin like story of him as a sort of a misunderstood.
He's just an impaler,
valiant,
standing in front of a girl.
Yeah, he is. He's not simply based on the legend of Vlad the Impaler. He is Vlad the Impaler, who meets a monster in a cave and gets bitten and turns into Dracula and has the power to vanquish entire armies by himself. Yes?
No, I had a question because I just saw the lead guy in an interview and he was telling a little bit about the myth.
Luke Evans, yeah.
Right, so he gets bitten, but he's not supposed to drink blood for 3 days, but he does. Okay, this is where movies lose me.
Yes.
No, I mean this, like, no, really.
Don't feed the gremlin after midnight.
Oh, don't ask questions?
No, it's you. No, you're absolutely right. The problem with this movie is that it sets up rules.
Right.
And then just sort of was like,
really more suggestions.
Yes. And the, it's boring. He's the most boring Dracula in the world because he's the reluctant Dracula.
Hot, sexy, and reluctant?
Well, funny you mention that. I'll get to that in just a second. Okay. He's this. I'm going where you think I'm going.
Yeah. Okay.
He only Dracula's when he has to. Like, he only does his most intense Dracula-ing when, like, his family is in danger. Because what he would really, really, really like to do the most is stay home and, you know, tuck his widow son into bed every night and all.
He's
know,
just a nice guy.
And make sweet love to his hot wife.
And then Abraham Lincoln shows up.
No. Yeah. but he has to Dracula everybody because the Turks are invading and they're going to enslave all the Transylvanian boys. Dominic Cooper is really funny because he's like the head of the Turks. And he's like, I am owed 1,000 boys!
Wow.
Nothing weird
so
about
wait.
That.
So Luke Evans is Transylvanian and Dominic Cooper is a Turk.
Uh-huh.
Oh boy.
They're both British. Anyway, yeah. Here's the funny thing about Luke Evans and all of the lovemaking scenes.
Yeah.
There is one that someone who writes a critical paper someday, there's a scene where he realizes that if he does make love to his wife, he risks
Draculaing her.
Draculaing her.
With his Dracula spur.
And he has to pull back.
Because he's Catholic also.
Yeah. And from that moment on, everything in the film becomes like Luke Evans rejecting sex of some sort. Or some sort of weird, you know, transformative situation. Mind you, this is the actor.
Luke Evans has rejected sex.
This is the actor who, 10 years ago or
during
so?
During the Broadway run of Taboo.
Yeah.
Whatever that was.
Gave all these interviews to the gay press, being all like, yeah, I'm gay, 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 I'm gay, I'm gay.
Here's the gay porn I like watching.
I am gay, I'm so gay, I am gay.
Yeah.
Dracula is so gay. Okay, carry
on. He was in 2004.
Okay. Yeah.
Now that he's in the Hobbit movies and the Fast and Furious movies.
And the Immortals.
And the Immortals.
He has girlfriends.
Suddenly.
Listen, I know a lot of guys in Hollywood like that.
Yeah, but you know what? They didn't give those interviews 10 years ago.
And they
are out of the bag.
And they aren't now saying things like, what? I never said that. Like, you don't know how the internet works.
Well, do you think in today's day and age, like, it's necessary for an actor of his stature to have to...
I don't care. Yeah. I don't care what they
look, and he's British, so we kind of assume that they're all city anyway. You know.
What I do care about is takebacks.
Understood.
Yeah.
You said it, own it.
Yeah.
It's fair
enough. It's very Fox News of him to just basically like deny this thing that's out there.
Don't be a dummy.
How would you feel? Like,
you're making us all look bad by being a dummy.
What if he's bi?
Well, then play that card.
I would love it if he would just say that.
Don't play the, I never said that. Yeah, no, play the, oh, I'm sexually fluid, and I'm not about labels, man. I fall in love with the person.
Yeah, it wasn't that crap. We need to talk about Kevin, or what's his face?
Oh, Ezra Miller.
Yeah, that kid, he's all like, I don't want to label myself, I'm just blah, 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 I'm everything.
I get boners, you know, period. That's it. And, you know, fine.
And
we'll accept that.
That's fine, yeah. It's just a weird, it becomes a thing that turns stuff on its head when you see... You know, him in a movie, and there's a woman trying to get it on with him, and he's like, no.
So it's like Rock Hudson's home movie.
Suddenly, yeah. So it's a terrible movie. It's boring. There's some fun visual stuff, like when he conducts the bats. He has bat minions, you know? And so he sort of conducts them like this. He's like, oh, you know, waving his hands in the air and sort of like voguing and, you know, and...
It's a preview of Jason Momoa as Aquaman, probably.
Yeah. And so there's that.
And they can do the
Charles Dance plays the monster. Charles Dance plays the monster in the
also
cave.
British.
Oh, and he gives like the movie has this much nastiness in it, just like a tiny amount.
It's
all because of him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
And you want that nastiness because
that's
it's
what I was
Dracula.
Gonna say. I want all nasty. I want nothing but nasty.
Yeah,
when
I saw the rating, I thought,
and you just
be
get a little tiny bit of nasty because
Miss Jackson,
Charles Dance, transfers the vampirism to Luke Evans by taking his foot-long tongue and sticking it into Luke Evans' neck wound.
That's a metaphor.
It's so great. That is a great scene. And Gary Cotty is sitting next to me in the movie theater going. It's like, that's why that's effective, because you're going, yeah. So like two moments in the whole movie. There's a cool sort of sort of crispy black metal sort of doom visual quality to it. That's it. That's all you get.
But even that stuff, it's like being used everywhere now.
Yes,
it's like it's so homogenized now that
So whatever. Told.
So if it was the only movie playing in a small town, would you recommend someone see it or stay home and
are you
eat
bored?
Porridge?
Are you bored in
your
small
town? Yeah,
they're
bored in their
small
town.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. When I was a kid in Roswell, New Mexico, and then in Hobbs, New Mexico, which is actually more boring than Roswell, New Mexico. When I was a kid and we wound up in Hobbs, New Mexico, There was a Saturday night. I remember this Saturday night distinctly, when there was literally nothing to do, and I don't know what my three friends were doing without me, but they were not with me, and it was either stay home and watch my stepfather drink, or go see the Neil Diamond Jazz Singer.
First of all, I love After Neil Diamond. So today. I don't even see this as a hard choice, frankly.
For me, it was a hard choice.
Now, if it were the Danny Thomas Jazz Singer, I think you'd really have a problem.
And I thought, I guess I'm going to go see the Jazz Singer.
Yeah, you're damn right, because Laurence Olivier's in it.
That's right. And Lucy Arnaz.
I know. See,
that's how that works.
From my perspective now, I would say, well, yeah, we're going to go watch that. Lucy Arnaz and Laurence Olivier. Same movie.
You get to see Laurence Olivier say, I have no son.
Because guess what happens after you go see? You go home and you join your dad in prison.
So,
don't Bogart.
So, the answer to your question is.
You share the drinking afterwards. Yeah. It's a bonding thing.
The answer is yes, you go see Dracula Untold if you live in Hobbs, New Mexico, and there's one movie theater and you're bored.
And scene. Yeah. I think that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anyone who actually listens to us who lives
in Hobbs, New Mexico. Write us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com if you do.
Okay, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. Tell us what it's about, Alonzo Durrell Day.
Wow, well, okay, let's see. Alexander is 10, or 11, rather, because he turns 12 in the movie.
Yeah.
And he's having a crappy day. He wakes up with gum in his hair, and he gets... somebody texts out a weird picture of his head on like a pretty lady body to all of his classmates, and
he's being cyber-bullied.
Yes, and a popular classmate is counter-programming his birthday party against Alexander's, and just one crap thing after another. He sets this girl who likes biology notes on fire with a Bunsen burner, and so at midnight he lights himself a birthday cupcake candle and wishes that the rest of his perfect family could find out what it's like to have cruddy days, because they never do. Everything's so awesome. So of course next day rolls around and they're all in it. So that means Dad Steve Carell is having problems with trying to get to his job interview on time, and his baby brother eats a highlighter, and his mother, played by Jennifer Garner, has a disastrous book reading with Dick Van Dyke, and his sister, who's doing Peter Pan on stage, gets hopped up on cold meds, and his brother gets a zit on his otherwise perfect forehead, and they rent him a powder blue tuxedo by accident for the prom. These are all really kind of lame problems, and the movie seems like it's set up to be this frenetic farce of disasters and chaos and da, da, da. And it's sort of like every time anything remotely chaotic happens, it kind of grinds to a halt so the family can be there for each other and remind them that it's going to be okay and be supportive. And then another nutty thing happens and then they're all supportive again. And it never has the sort of crazy frenetic energy that you would want from this movie, which is, oddly enough, directed by Miguel Arteta. The guy who gave us Chuck and Buck, now working for Disney. And I don't begrudge him the studio gig and paycheck, but boy, this movie is not nearly as manic and frantic and fun as it ought to be.
No eccentricity to it or anything? Or?
Not really. It is so much like the Disney live-action comedy that we've come to expect, that sort of brightly lit, shot in Toluca Lake, kind of blandly cul-de-sac-y sort of thing. I mean, there are some moments, like Jennifer Coolidge plays the DMV, testing person that the brother has, screws up his driving exam with. And, the Dick Van Dyke scene is funny. There's a couple of moments here and there.
I don't know that it is.
I thought it was funny.
Mm. If you were a 12-year-old.
That's the thing. People ask me that. There was one critic said, I don't know, kids might like it. Kids have no taste.
No, I mean if you're a 12-year-old with taste, would you like it?
I think it's like if you're eight, you would probably get into it and have fun with it.
It's squarely aimed at the tween sort of audience.
Yeah, like the 12-year-old is the aspirational
character. Is it as fun as that darn cat?
No.
Which version?
Either version.
No, there's only one version.
There is only one. And I am with you on that, sir.
No, it is not nearly as fun as that darn cat, which is a fun like a whole, movie.
Yeah. It
is
not as fun as Disney
it's
comedies.
Not as fun as either Freaky Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
Not counting the TV one, which I didn't see.
The fact that it moves slowly was not even my biggest problem. And the fact that it was not aimed at the audience that the book is aimed at was not even a big problem for me. Because the book is for little children. It's a picture book for little children. And the problems that 6-year-old Alexander experiences in the picture book are little child problems, like my I don't like these pajamas, and I had lima beans for dinner, and my bath was too hot, and I bit my tongue, and you know.
God, that's why I don't have kids. I'm just listening to you. Exactly. Like, shut up.
Exactly. But so,
mommy didn't get a call back.
I was just thinking. I have this problem sometimes.
Picture what?
Those are
Rachel True's hypothetical child's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Mommy doesn't like her career today.
Wait, is it wrong that I talk to my nephews like that? They're like 3 and 5, and sometimes they're like, I want, nah. And I'm like, yeah, you know what I want? I want an IRA account. Like, I'll literally say that to them, and because it shuts them down. They stop, and they're like, huh?
I'm a big believer in the stomping of a child's dreams.
Yeah, so me too. Wholeheartedly. High five. Sorry to interrupt your
This is the program.
My big problem with this is the weird level of Disney product placement.
Oh yeah.
What's weird about that? Today's world.
No. Not product placement for actual products. Product placement for Disney products.
Properties like Peter Pan. Like,
but again, what's weird about that?
Well, it's not
weird. It's just irritating.
Yeah.
Peter Pan and Wreck-It Ralph and
Mary Poppins.
Oh, right. It's a commercial for a commercial for a commercial. Yeah. And actually,
Dick Van Dyke shows up to remind you that why didn't you see Saving Mr. Banks? You know, like that's the thing.
Did anyone play Dick Van Dyke in Saving Mr. Banks? They skip that part, right?
They skip the making.
I have a huge problem too with product placement in terms of the way right now where we're at in today. In 20 years, it'll be really integrated or so obvious that it's just there and we're all used to it.
It'll be Idiocracy.
But, right, it will be Idiocracy. But actually, on an episode of my TV show Huffy Huffy from the now defunct UPN, we are actually cited in some studies because we're one of the first shows where we actually had to product place something.
In the dialogue.
My good friend Alec Mappa had to say, look, Mona, which was my character, look at this this oil of Olay. Look what it's done for me. Olay for Olay. So he had to say that, and, you know, he's a great comedian. He sold it. And then, you know, cut in between scenes. I said, okay, where's my Olay product? Why am I pitching this? Where's the money I get from this? I was hired
as an actor. Where's my lifetime supply of soap?
No, but really, I was hired as an actor to be on this show. I wasn't hired to be an Olay pitch person. And also, I know that there's a room full of Olay products somewhere around here. And you're not sharing
Mama needs
them.
Some.
So that was... And I kind of... I mean, Olay is a really good product, by the way, but I hated the fact that I had to...
It is our preferred soap. It is.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not even being paid by them.
But
like,
shea
it
butter?
Is a,
hell yeah.
It's a decent product, but it seemed really awkward. Yeah. But a lot of people, I think... Not your podcast listeners, they're very savvy. But most people just don't realize...
Not
like,
all of them.
Everything is a commercial for the commercial.
Well,
that's all it was.
Well, it's Tebow's fault, because now no one's actually watching the ads. They put the ads into the show. So that's why, like, you know, there was Tebow,
another fine product.
Yes. there was a Degrassi where they had a conversation about the Zemo, whatever, that thing that burns zits off your face. Yeah. There was our friend Tony Tripoli, who was on Fashion House, talked about how, like, Bo Derek... They kept having to make her say the line about the Maybelline scholarship for some fashion show thing, and she didn't want to do it. And I they finally got it out of her. It was just, you know.
It has gotten to the point now when you watch a TV, like you're watching a TV show, and a character expresses love for another TV show, and you realize it's a show from another network. I always go, "Good for you."
Or there was that 30 Rock where they're talking about McFlurries, and Liz Lemonet says, "What? It's not product placement if I like it."
So here's the biggest problem with Alexander. It is a bizarre sort of class moralizing sort of movie.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
where you can fix your kid's life if you just have the scratch.
You buy them an
to have an Australian petting zoo.
Yeah, because everything is righted at the end of this film. Here comes the spoiler: by mom and dad getting him live kangaroos for his birthday party because he's obsessed with Africa.
Australia.
He's obsessed with Australia. And later, Gary Cotty.
Bye.
And pause it just for a moment.
Okay, we're back. Yes. So yeah, the ending is kind of
buy him off at the end, and I'm like, well, that's good for you. You got the money for live petting zoo with crocodiles and, you know, emus and whatever.
I will say that for a PG-rated Disney family comedy, Jennifer Garner does say the word penis like four times in one scene, which is kind of hilarious.
As in happiness, right?
She apparently pianist?
part of the terrible day that everybody else is having is that she walks in on the older son, like when he's in the bathroom, and he's like still wigging about it when they're in the car. She goes, I've seen your penis before. I've seen all the penises in this car.
When are they all naked in the car? Excuse me, that sounds like... a really weird thing.
I guess it's really titillating for a 12-year-old if you hear a woman say penis, right?
I guess so,
that's titillating. Yeah.
Okay, so that's movies. What are your DVD recommendations?
Wow, that's it? Okay. Yeah. Well, just so people know, next week, because Dave wants to get caught up, we're going to talk about
everything.
St. Vincent and Whiplash and Kill the Messenger and Left Behind for sure, as well as all the next week's new stuff.
And when I say that's movies, what I mean is we're going to talk about Gone Girl. This episode has two endings.
Yes.
It has the ending for people who haven't seen Gone Girl and the ending for the people who have seen Gone Girl. So give me your DVD recommendation. I'm going to skip letters.
Okay, fine.
Because we'll just do those next week.
My DVD recommendation is the Diamond Edition 60th Anniversary Blu-ray of White Christmas. And hey, why not enjoy it more by watching it and listening to the Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode devoted to White Christmas.
You could do that in December.
Yes, or now.
You could do it now.
You could certainly do it in December.
Not Halloween yet.
True, but I'm weird that way. Anyway, if you want the, we'll have a link to buy the Blu-ray.
I thought you were going to say buy my book.
On our Facebook page, but to buy the link to our episode, you can just email us. You can PayPal us $1.99 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Include your email address and we'll send you the commentary that we did for White Christmas. And are we going to, do we want to start shilling my book or is it too early for that?
It's too early for that.
Yeah, we'll do that later.
We'll do it next week.
Plenty of that coming in the future. You have that to look forward to. Okay, so this is the first ending for people who are not do not want to hear all of our spoilers for Gone Girl. So we will, of course, thank you for listening this far and remind you to check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com, listen to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Matt Atchity and Gray Drake, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, the Brett Easton Ellis Podcast, the Schmoes Know, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. Leave us a review there. It does help people find the show. You can stream us for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on our Facebook page, which if you haven't liked, please do. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at TVTag.com. Thanks to Blue for our awesome theme music. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And if you don't want to hear Gone Girl spoilers, press stop now.
Here's my favorite thing about that list that you just read.
Mm-hmm. It
reminded me, someone on Twitter this week tweeted at me and you about the Schmoes.
Oh, right.
And said that they, what did they say? They lick my hairy balls or
something like that.
That.
Yeah.
Which Schmoes?
The Schmoes No Podcast.
Ah.
Yeah. Which
so we just forwarded to them and said, hey,
endorsements. we retweeted it to them.
Oh, right. And isn't this whole thing brought to you by Wereskunk?
No, that ended.
Oh, that ended.
But thank you for mentioning it. They did reach their goal
they
on
did?
Kickstarter. Yes.
I think in part from you guys.
I hope. Some of our listeners did kick in. So thank you guys for supporting our sponsor.
Maybe there's a role in I Was a Teenage Wereskunk for you.
Fingers crossed.
That agent that wouldn't
so,
for the crowd.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Part one.
Bye.
Let's make sure the kids have gone up to their and gone to sleep.
Now we begin to talking about Gone Girl, and we are not going to hold back. We're going to tell you everything about Gone Girl.
Spoil the hell out of
you are not. You were all the reviews I've read have been like, I will tell you what happens in the first hour of Gone Girl, and then I will not tell you what happens in the next 90 minutes of Gone Girl.
Good point.
And we're going to tell you what happens in all of the 2.5 hours of Gone Girl, because this is a film that is full of hate. and I saw it yesterday, and I still don't know 100% how I feel.
Well, it's because it's a jumble of a movie, I think. I really do think it's a jumble of a movie, and I think what made the book, and I've read the book and the movie, what made the book fun was that even though it was a crazy, crazy plot, you were actually, she she maintains a sense of being inside these characters' heads very well,
yeah.
so that the storyline isn't, like, always announcing itself as totally bonkers. It's only yeah. after you finish reading, you go, that was a really crazy book, sorry.
Nope. Right. We'll fix it.
Oh, not me, Robert, with the first curse word.
Nice.
So, oh, do you have to, like,
no, mark, I'm just writing it down, so I'll remember right. later.
So, the movie... It kind of makes it very clear how strange and crazy the story is, and it doesn't always keep the right tone to let you enjoy how crazy it is.
Tonally, it's a very weird film, especially as it nears the end,
yeah.
and it ramps up into, like...
Crazy Town?
Crazy Town. Blood feast, you know, sort yeah. of film. And when that happened, you know, David Fincher's films, for me, are not even really about the story. They're about David Fincher's, you know, ways.
Yeah.
And I like him so much, and I love the darkness that he's obsessed with, and I love, you know, I love his compositions, and I love his editing, and I love the way things look, and I love the way he gets actors to react in certain ways, and he knows exactly how he wants their face to be in a shot, and he knows he wants a weird sort of off to the side Ben Affleck in a shot, so that the God Bless America sign that you aren't supposed to notice is just on the wall behind him, mm-hmm. and that's supposed to be there. That's the other half of that shot. I love all of that stuff about David Fincher. So when this one goes off the rails in many different ways at many different times, I kept following it thinking, I don't know what he's doing, but I sure do like the way it looks and feels.
I was very into it, and I was engrossed. I hadn't read the book. I didn't know where the story was going. I'd been trying to avoid spoilers, and I think, like, if he's going to do this kind of sort of potboiler, you know, like pop novel stuff, it was way more fun than The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which I didn't hate.
Well, see, I think The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is more along the lines of what it brought out more of what he's good at than this one. I think Gone Girl is a movie that has all the slickness we expect from David Fincher, but none of the joy that we get from what Hitchcock does when he right. has all his obsessions up on screen.
Sure, no. And Matt Atchie actually had a good point that, like, he'd love to see the De Palma version of this.
Exactly. I think, yeah, because...
That's true.
Exactly. It would be so much more bonkers in a way that actually got you... And this is ties into, I think, the problem people are having with the portrayal of women in it. I think...
Yeah.
And I think Amy is a character who, even though you... know what she does in the second half, you still don't know a whole lot about her. I think she's very unclear. And all the great femme fatales of the past, they were so fully drawn by the director and the writing and the acting that you could enjoy it. You could get into it. You could just.
But can I throw this out?
You don't do that.
As a woman, though, I'm going to say this. I bought when I was watching it that if you grew up with parents who wrote a book based on your childhood, like the main character Amy had.
Improving your childhood.
The perfect version of your childhood, yeah. where you always got A's and you were always the best one in the book. But in real life, you could never live up to that. That actually was enough for me in the movie to justify why we all get the sociopath we deserve.
But it all comes at the end. For the first half, she's the movie's presented in a way that you don't actually know a key thing about her. And of course, this is from the book, but you don't know a key thing about her until the second. That means Rosamund Pike has to ramp up as a character very quickly, and she's a great actress, but it just leaves that schematic aspect of the story problematic to enjoy.
I don't know. I liked the switcheroo. I liked the untrustworthy narrator aspect of it. And, you know, the misogyny argument, and I that was one of the few things that I couldn't avoid, like, just on Facebook or people talking about that. I kind of feel like, well, A, everyone in this movie is sort of despicable in their own way, so that's sort of like, you know, that's a wider net. But then also, I think if you look at, as far as, like, just the women, I mean, Amy's a monster, but, you know, you've got the detective, who I think is a great character, and it's played by my friend Kim Dickens. I thought she was great.
She does a great job. She's fantastic.
I'm so proud of her. And then, but like, you know, I thought the sister, played by Carrie Coon, was a really interesting character, and I was a big fan of her from The Leftovers.
She's one of the few, like, really, like, three-dimensional characters, the sister.
Yeah.
I love Tyler Perry so
much.
Oh,
my Perry, God!
He is a revelation. What did I say, Rachel? What did I say?
You
I turned
said
to you and said, Tyler Perry is
the most relaxed person and best performer.
Every scene that Tyler Perry's in, he's looking, it's almost as if he is looking at the camera and rolling his eyes.
That is it. He's.
You almost expect him to do like this, the Jerry Lewis, just look at the camera and go.
Yeah. It was a juicy comic performance. In fact, his is the performance that made me kind of miss. I feel like. There were certain parts of the second half where you want to laugh, because it is kind of funny, even though it's dark and
I found myself laughing through the entire film. Is that appropriate?
I do, too, in a gallows kind of way.
The gallows humor really kicks into the second half, I think, because I think some of the things that the movie thinks are funny aren't funny, but I think this movie could have been really just all-out funny if they'd played it a certain way, and Tyler Perry was definitely giving that performance.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple things in it that lost me a little, and like the further I get from it, the more they kind of bug me, like... Just because so much of it is so clockwork and precise that there's some sloppy things. Like when Amy's in the cabin and she calls the cops back home about the shed, and then it takes them like 2 days to actually show up with a warrant. I'm thinking, they're in the middle of a murder investigation. They'd have been there like
okay,
that.
Okay, also, how did Amy lose like 20 pounds in a week, by the way? I mean, no, really.
And then the other thing was that the... And maybe he's more fleshed out in the books, so it doesn't feel that way, but like the Neil Patrick Harris character, the Desi character, just feels like this very convenient plot thing. Like he's this emergency plan V.
I love that he was cast as that character, because the way he plays it in such a bizarre way. I feel like this character, and I've never read the book, but I feel like this character is sort of trying to convince himself that he is heterosexual. And in reality simply wants an adult Barbie doll to dress up and play with.
No,
yeah.
No.
Which again, though, in the book, I think works a little more effectively because you're in their head. And here we're relying on Neil Patrick Harris to just carry that, because we know his personal history.
Right.
So. No, I mean, I have no qualms against his performance. I just mean the character is written just felt... Like, he was just there as this plot convenience.
With that lake house. It's like, nothing happens at the end without that lake house.
Yeah, and all the cameras.
Here's the thing that I'm still running this around in my head. The misogyny element. It cannot have escaped anyone in the production of this film that it is saying... That here's a woman who says she was raped. She lied. Here's a woman who's setting up her husband. She lied.
Yeah, that she's talking about claiming spousal
abuse. Everything
she
does is a lie. Now I understand that unique weirdo situations make the most interesting story.
Like Demi Moore sexually harassing Michael Douglas.
Correct. So I get that aspect of it. Like, they don't make a movie about the millions and millions and millions of women who are tormented, stalked, abused, raped, murdered while pregnant, you know, all that stuff. They don't make those movies about those women because that's the thing you see on the news every day and just go, oh, God, another one of those, you know. So, of course, they're going to make a film about the one who lied. And so I get that. So it cannot have escaped them that that's what they were doing. That they were making a film about lying.
I don't think
woman.
It did escape them, because any of the movie threads in like lines that are supposed to be knowing, like pop culture moments where everyone kind of knows that there's a...
Right.
Yeah.
And so I understand all that.
Yeah.
I understand that in this world of just pure freak show hatefulness and pretty much everyone except Kim Dickens and Patrick Fugit are a part of something gross.
Well, even Patrick Fugit like is jumping to conclusions
but he's jumping to conclusions, but he's not a nasty person. Mm. Like, her parents are these weird cartoons. Yeah. And
Missy Pyle as Nancy Grace.
And Missy Pyle is weird. And so,
sister,
like...
But the sister's not.
The sister's not, great. No, yeah. The sister's fine. She's, like, the voice of sort of reason. Right. But I'm having a weird sort of internal problem about... And this is wrong of me, because I say all the time, you know, the audience's response to this is not the artist's problem. But people are going to see this movie and be like, yeah, chicks, they lie, man.
But you're also been talking about an author, because I've read does she have three books out?
Yeah.
I've read all three of them, and they are all about deeply disturbed women protagonists.
Yeah.
So,
But they're not, the other two books just aren't as crazy as Gone Girl is in terms of like
the outlandishness. This is the most sociopathic character, but I mean, and the other one's cutting herself, and the other one, you know, they're women who harm themselves or others.
I just think
she wrote the screenplay.
If I felt like this was maybe less trashy, I wouldn't have such a problem.
No, that's what I said to Robert.
I think it should be more trashy.
No,
my problem with the movie is that it should be played as trash. It's played
as... But Robert,
as...
if it went any trashier, it's a Lifetime movie. Seriously. Because I think the book is really good, but the plot points are strictly a Lifetime movie.
But David Fincher is not a... He makes very...
I want to see Catherine Briot's version of this film. You know what I mean? Yeah. I want to see Claire Denis' version of this film.
I
want to see Michael Haneke's
version. But I think a woman director, and I think Fincher is amazing, by the way. Of course,
I do too.
But I do think because this was again a delicate woman protagonist character, mm-hmm. perhaps a woman's touch. Perhaps there's a woman director who could have
Fritz
handled
Long's
it.
Serious. It's like you want Barbara Stanwyck playing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking back to movies where we enjoyed women being bad, and it's because there was a strange sense of
Kathleen
empowerment
Turner
that came out of it.
The craziest thing is that I feel like I need to see it again, because I'm still trying to sort through what I feel about it what I'm thinking about.
I'm reminded of, in the early 90s, how the queer community freaked out about Basic Instinct. And I think that if that character existed in a context of a variety of portrayals in a variety of films, then you can have the bisexual ice pick killer, and it's fine because it's one of a panoply of queer representations that you're seeing on film. If that's the only one coming from a major studio that year, then of course, yeah, people flip out about it. And I'm thinking that if we had stronger women's stories and stronger female characters in general coming out of Hollywood, that we could absorb this one and it would be less of a big deal. But I think because women are so often mistreated and mishandled by mainstream American movies, that this one just feels like,
it's no less seduction.
The hashtag...
good one.
The hashtag on Twitter that was going around, not all men. Y'all know what I'm talking about here, right? This is the not all men movie. Like, this is... Well, look, this guy's not a rapist. This guy's not a murderer. I'm feeling weird about it.
I think you're feeling weird because I think it's just the problem the tone has with the Amy character. She's just not there enough as somebody that we know at the end to justify how crazy, which all the crazy things she does.
But as a film, I love his style, and I thought Kim Dickens and Patrick Fugit and Tyler Perry and
Carrie Coon
and
no,
Cilla Ward.
Oh God,
she was great.
So
was
rad great. Her one like moment. All the supporting cast, a strange assortment of supporting cast, and so great.
It's funny because you know today Dave was watching on TiVo the Ellen interview from this week with Shia LaBeouf, who is basically on the apology tour so that he can promote Fury. And I was just thinking this after seeing Gone Girl. I mean, I'm already cynical about this sort of TV appearance, but it was just so nakedly choreographed. Like where Ellen says, "Well, I understand he got in some trouble. I don't follow that sort of thing, so I don't know anything about it." I'm like, "Oh, you liar!"
So
I mean,
she gets to have no opinion, and he gets to direct the conversation.
Well, with no embarrassing follow-up questions.
With the movie, and for me, in terms of men and women right now, I think it's an interesting time period because men, and they can be like 70. 60-year-old men actors, but what are we doing with them? We're making them action stars
yeah.
now.
Yeah, right.
And with women, it does seem to me we're not really empowering them so right. much at the moment. I don't have a problem with Gone Girl in terms of the woman character, though, because there's good and bad women and men.
Right.
But it is interesting that you men seem to be able to do no wrong in film.
right.
Old, you know, I mean, really.
What was that Amy Poehler line of the Golden Globes about, like, Hollywood is presenting so many opportunities for Meryl Streep.
exactly.
And Helen Mirren and gets to be an action hero. At however old she is. But, like, she's the only one.
Right.
She's the one.
I think this way, the male action heroes are getting older. The female action heroes are becoming 15 years old and being dressed as, like, school children.
Yeah.
That's what's true.
Yeah, that's true. So you guys get to age gracefully is what I noticed. Women, we have to go age backwards.
That's sweet salt and pepper hair going on.
That is a fine head of hair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Grandfather with a widow's
peak. I take note of it.
By the way, this is why my DVD pick, I have one because I went on it, but now I realize I would suggest Zodiac because I think Zodiac is the great David Fincher movie where he takes a subject that you think you've seen before, the serial killer movie, and he makes it into a story, an actually genuinely deep story about obsession and unknowingness that I think is great.
I
have problems with Gone Girl. Zodiac is great.
I would like to just add one more thing about Gone Girl, that I do think it is a good and interesting dissertation on just people and the book, I would say even more so the movie, but the dissertation in people and what we think is important, what we don't, what lies we will tell ourselves and other people to get what we want. So on that level, I did really enjoy the movie.
The fact that it inspires this much discussion, even if it's not completely successful, it is that it's got something going on in there, and I think it's exciting to have a movie that I think that people aren't agreeing about, but that everybody talks about in a way they're taking it seriously, even if you think it's misogynist or whatever, you're not just dismissing it because clearly like Fincher is too good of a filmmaker to just toss off something that's merely offensive or whatever. I mean, you have to kind of talk about what's going on in this movie and what's being said. And
but he's a sick puppy.
He's a sick puppy. I'll give you that.
Ooh, is he single?
I don't know. All right, so now we're really done.
Now we're really done. Rachel True, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're amazing. We love you.
Always fun running into you guys at the movies. By the way.
Thank you.
Even though it's at the worst
at
ones,
the worst
apparently.
Movies ever.
Not all movies. Occasionally, I take her to a good one.
Not all movies.
Hashtag. Robert, thank you for joining us. As always, it's a treat to have you here.
Thank you.
Indeed.
And all right. Well, so thanks for listening, guys. We will be back next week.
Goodbye.